Hey, do you remember Problem Child? Hello, and welcome to Hey, Do You Remember?, a show where we reminisce about a movie or TV series we grew up with, then take off the rose-tinted glasses to see how it holds up today. I'm Chris.
I'm Donna.
And I'm Carlos.
And today we're revisiting Problem Child.
Florence, why can't we adopt?
Okay, let's get a kid.
Okay, you want a little baby? Well, old baby's a little. It's no problem there. Just this morning, I came upon a 7-year-old. Ah, smart as a tack. A little rambunctious. But weren't we all at that age?
Problem Child is a 1990 comedy that stars Michael Oliver as Junior, a 7-year-old troublemaker who's been returned to his orphanage by 30 different sets of parents. But will 31 be the magic number? That's what everyone's hoping when the Healys, played by John Ritter and Amy Yazbek, show up to adopt him. Junior has no reason to trust them, but his new dad is determined to kill him with kindness, and at one point straight up kill him. Donna, what do you remember about Problem Child?
Well, when we decided to do this movie, the first thing that I remembered was basically a 45-minute long puke scene that I remember watching as a child and being like, oh my god, this is making me nervous. And it turns out that's not from Problem Child 1.
No.
Besides the puke, I think pretty much the only thing I remember, I know I watched it, with my parents, and I remember being, like, a little stressed out because Junior is just such a bad kid. And I think it bothered me. I was like, oh, my God, he should try to behave, like, a little bit.
Just remove all the drama from the film.
Yeah.
God, if only everybody would just get along.
A feeling I have a lot sometimes during movies like this. But, you know, I was talking to a couple people telling them that this was, that we were going to do this movie. And actually, I don't know if I'm supposed to name drop or not, but Mez, I talked to Mez about it, and he was like, do you remember just thinking, like, God, why doesn't this kid shape up?
We have so much to talk about, because I feel so differently now as an adult, but go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I think that was my biggest, like, I was stressed out at how bad he was when I was that age, and I think that I guess I'm just glad to know I wasn't totally alone in that. But yeah, those were basically my memories. Like, wow, mom and dad, you should probably take me out for ice cream because I'm not doing any of that. Like, you've got it pretty easy here. I think you can see after watching this movie.
Carlos, what about you?
I remember, kind of similarly to Donna, I remember just kind of watching this movie and going, why isn't everyone just being nice to each other? Why is everyone so mean to each other the whole time? And in movies like that actually did tend to stress me out as like a 7-year-old.
Hmm.
I don't know, maybe it was like the divorce my parents had just gone through, which is like, just get along, everyone.
I think that's why this stuff felt so normal to me as a kid.
Oh, man.
Like, oh, God, I've seen much worse.
As far as, like, actual moments from this, I definitely remember the it's my party and I'll cry if I want to montage.
Oh, yeah.
That's imprinted on my brain apparently forever. And I also, I remembered the line, right before that, yesterday they didn't even have a kid,
oh, yeah,
but today they have one that's older than me. And that's gross. Like, I just remember that as a kid being like, why is that gross? I don't know. So that's what I remember the most about this, this movie. And then, I remember the puke scene, but that's not from this movie. It's from another movie entirely.
I remember going to see this with my dad and my sister one weekend. My parents were divorced also, and this was definitely a movie mom would never have taken us to go see. Actually, you know what? We went to this theater in a in a mall near my dad's place, and I remember they had all these posters up for the Roger Corman Fantastic Four movie that never came out.
Oh, wow.
And I got really excited, and of course I had no idea who Roger Corman was at that point and that the budget was probably $12. I just thought, wow, a Fantastic Four movie. There's no way that could suck. And this was obviously before the internet, so there was no way for me to look up what happened. It just never came out. And for a while, I started to wonder if I'd imagined the entire thing. Anyway, Problem Child. So my sister and I both really wanted to see this, like, pretty bad. And before we rewatched it, I sort of had my memories of it all jumbled up with the second one, like you guys, apparently. And so, and I think it's because the sequel came out just 1 year later, and I saw it at the same theater, and so I just sort of unintentionally, I lumped them together. There were things that I thought happened in this one that were actually in the second one, not the puking thing, but other stuff, and then there was stuff I was surprised to see in this one because I remembered it being in the other one. I remembered the birthday party montage being in the second one. Is it because, does he dress like a devil in that one too?
Maybe?
I don't know.
I think there's just one, he just dresses like a devil in the first one.
Okay. He does, like, in the third one, too, but you're probably lucky and have never seen that one.
Yeah, no.
It's barely a sequel. You know what I remember vividly is my dad being very upset that he paid full price for three tickets for something that's barely a movie. It's just over an hour long. I mean, I knew it was short, but I couldn't believe it when I saw the running time. I've stood in line longer at the post office than the time it takes to watch this movie.
Seriously, dude. It's like, if you can't get your movie to 90 minutes, like, it's not a movie.
Well, and they cut, like, figure stuff out, the other 10 too. There's quite a few deleted scenes, so I don't know if the studio just didn't like it, and they were like, look, the only thing we can do to help the audience in this scenario is make this as brief an experience as possible. I don't know. I don't know what they were thinking, but
we should say the official running time is 78 minutes.
With,
is that correct?
With credits.
And with the really long Universal openings.
Right. It's about 70 minutes or so total.
Yeah.
But when I was eight, I was 8 years old when this came out, and the movie ends with a pig farting in a woman's face, so it was a home run in my book. I mean, I'm almost certain I walked out of this thinking, wow, they really finished strong. Really stuck that landing.
Yeah, I'm really glad they went with the Citizen Kane ending on that one. Yeah. Pay homage,
I don't know. They knew their audience. But, I mean, yeah, so I rented this one and the second one a whole bunch when they came out in video, and I laughed my ass off. And I also remember the previously mentioned awful third movie that was made for TV and had an entirely different cast almost. And I remember the cartoon, too. Do you guys remember that?
What?
I didn't remember the cartoon until I started doing research for this. And I was like, oh, that totally was a thing that happened once.
Yeah, it ran for a couple of years. But the thing that sticks out most in my memory about that was that his dad all of a sudden was a police officer in it. It was so fucking bananas. But anyways, I haven't seen this movie in like a good 15 years. And I was not expecting much. That being said, we just looked at it with fresh eyes, so let's see how Problem Child holds up. When it starts with Junior's birth mother leaving him on the doorstep of this mansion, and the woman comes out and is like, who would abandon such a beautiful baby, or whatever, I'm like, oh, there's a pee joke coming. You can see her bracing for it. It's so telegraphed. But it's also like, this is why you don't keep him? He's a baby.
So shitty.
Those pee.
Did the baby also like pee out of its chest? Did anyone else notice
that? Off the high stream, yeah.
There's just no way. There's no way.
That's where I'm going to call bullshit on Problem
Child. Yeah, I'm out. I'm out 30
high.
Seconds in.
But this really sets the tone for the prologue of Junior moving through all of these families. I remembered him being a real nightmare, like you guys did. But as an adult, you realize almost immediately, or at least I did, that he's not actually a bad kid. He's just always surrounded by supremely shitty people.
Yeah.
And even when he does something horrific, like poisoning that one person's cat, he doesn't do it on purpose. Like, he thinks he's doing something nice. Like, oh, the cat is, this looks good. The cat's really going to like this. He's not just a bad egg or whatever. I mean, like, by the time we catch up with him at the orphanage, I'd fucking hate adults by that point, too.
Yeah. It was,
And this is going to be a running theme in this film for me. Junior is not a monster. He's misunderstood. And he's only really bad when he's been provoked. And the real issue is that his retaliation is severe, but it's never unwarranted. And that's what's so bizarre to me, is that this seems completely intentional on the part of the filmmakers, right? I mean, this is something they were very conscious of. It's how they got to make a movie with this premise and still have the lead character be somewhat sympathetic. But almost all of the reviews and criticism seemed to center around what a little shit he is. And it was really aggravating to read some of this. There was one review where this woman tore into the birthday party scene and said that he throws the presents in the pool because if he can't have them, no one can. Are you out of your goddamn crazy mind? Yeah. That is absolutely not what happens at all. And it's what's...
Yeah, no, that's total crap.
And that's what surprised me most about the film, to be honest, is it's... I mean, look, it's still very juvenile and there's a lot of crude humor, but it's also a lot wittier than I remember it. It has something to say. And even though it gets a little heavy-handed at some points, I mean, the movie's 70 minutes long. There's not a lot of room for nuance here. So it's pretty broad, but it's not unfocused. And there's actually like some satire laid in there. And there's just a whole lot of sweetness to balance out the gross stuff. And this is something that I think now we're really used to seeing in movies and in comedies in particular. But I think back in the early 90s, everyone just focused on the fart jokes and the pranks and the bad behavior. And we're sort of unfairly dismissive of what the movie's message actually is. And I know this sounds insane, and I'm not trying to overthink it, but I mean, I don't know. How do you guys feel about that? Did you get that as well, or am I like way off base here?
Donna?
Well, yeah, no, I thought it was a lot of it was just that, you know, yeah, he was just in a bad situation. I was alarmed at how many, like, what Carlos remembered, that, like, all of everything was like, ew, adoption, that's disgusting.
Yeah.
And I was like, is that a thing? Do people say that? Like, that's just, that's awful. That was never a part, thank goodness, of my life, like, thinking that adoption was disgusting. That's the weirdest thing in the world to me. So, yeah, everything that, like, comes his way, you totally get why he's, why he gets upset and why he would act out. I think some of the things that he does to act out are just so, they're just a little more turned up. Well, it's a movie, but than you might expect. So I think that's why it seems like, oh my God, where could this kid have come up with this horrible idea? Like, of course he would act out. Like, there's all these terrible people around him just being like absolutely awful, like right to his face. But the stuff that he comes up with, I mean, jeez.
But the thing, well, see, that stuff, I know we're not going to talk a ton about the second movie, but that's where I think the second movie goes a little wrong, is that in this one, to me, the stuff he does is bad, but like the most insane thing is actually within the first couple of minutes when he bulldozes the dude's trailer for stepping on his toys. That's sort of like, well that's not a rational response, but it's really not until the second movie that he becomes a little MacGyver and it gets cartoonish, where like he's blowing up grills and like that would straight up murder somebody, but it's okay. He lands in a pool with some, you know,
that's pretty bad.
Just some schmutz on his face. And he's fine.
You got a little schmutz on your face.
In this movie, though, I thought that was sort of the point, was that he's been treated so terribly by all the supposed role models in his life that it has escalated to this point, that now that's why he's so defensive, that he's always an outsider, that he's got kids that, because when you're that age, kids do look for anything about you that isn't, that is outside of the norm, and whatever they can find to pick on. And adoption was one of those things for certain kids. When I was this age, I had a friend that was adopted, and I know that he was teased about it.
Oh.
Yeah, but he wasn't teased about it by his new adopted grandfather.
Right, right.
Yeah.
You know, that was something that came across as, like, everyone in this movie looks at adoption as this bad thing, including the, you know, supposedly mature adults.
Well, like, yeah, the grandfather...
The mayor of the town looks down on the adopted kids. Like, that's horrible.
Well, the only thing is, the movie never paints him to be anything other than a total asshole. He's been a bad father to John Ritter's character. He's... sort of a shitty, sleazy politician type who does not have anyone's best interests in mind other than his own. So, that whole thing with him was shockingly mean-spirited. I had forgotten remorseless prick he was.
Yeah, he claims he decides that little boy is the devil.
Yeah,
instantly. 5 seconds after meeting him. And it's like, you all you know about this kid is that he's been in a fire. Like, there is nothing else to go on.
Well, here's
that boy's a devil.
Here's what I think they were going for, and it has a lot to do with my goodwill towards this movie. I would say about 80% of it is because of John Ritter. Boy, do I miss John Ritter. And
he's a treasure.
You know, the director of this movie, Dennis Dugan, is responsible for some terrible films. Grown Ups, Jack and Jill, Benchwarmers. It just seems like the older he gets, the less fucks he gives. This was his first film, and clearly it's a little rough around the edges, but I think what he really has working in his favor here is that he cast this really well. John Ritter, of course, being the standout for me, but Amy Yasbeck is great as the wife. Gilbert Gottfried's hilarious. Michael Richards is the bow tie killer. And the kid is really funny too. And so what I think they were going for is that the same way that Junior is an outsider with all the people his age, or just people in general, really. John Ritter's character is sort of the same way, where he's so nice and in a world of assholes that you could see how he wound up married to this woman, and the fact that everybody walks all over him, and like, I think what the movie was trying to go for was how much this father character and this son character needed each other, how similar they were despite one being so supremely nice and the other being so incredibly badly behaved.
Well, they basically needed to rub off on each other.
And there needed to be so much more of that, which I'm going to get into the more towards we get to like the middle chunk of the movie. But yes, that is obviously what they're setting up.
Agreed.
I think the first 20 or 30 minutes has most of my favorite stuff in the movie. I like all the jokes with Junior and the nuns. I really like him imitating Gilbert Gottfried. I think that scene is hysterical.
I like Gilbert Gottfried not being like Gilbert Gottfried, you know, Iago. You know, like he wasn't like...
Oh, and that's all he is in the second one.
Yeah, in this one he's very, like, he plays it more like Gilbert Gottfried, a character actor, not
right.
I'm paying for this particular voice.
Right, right, exactly, yeah.
He's great in it.
I also really like the way they set up the Healy's. The scene in the doctor's office where they find out that they can't conceive. I mean,
this is not a great
movie, but that is a great scene. The writing is strong. The jokes are funny. The performances are great. That's one of the first scenes, and I was like, wow, this is a lot better than I remember it being.
I wrote down in my notes, worst fertility doctor ever.
Oh, my
gosh. And then the quote, you don't even have a yellow thing, and your green thing is brown.
Unreal. Even their different reasons for wanting a kid is good stuff. They set up, you know, the tension between Ben and his father really early on. You understand why he wants a son of his own and why he's so determined to be a better father than his dad was. And then with her, it's more of a status thing because they're being left out of parties and conversations, and they're just generally looked down on because they're not part of that group. So for her, it's all about, well, it's like she says, parenting equals power. And you know what, guys? I really appreciate how clear the character motivations are, like how effortlessly they put all these pieces into play. Because even if you can tell immediately how it's all going to play out, we have watched so many movies lately that felt aimless. They didn't know exactly what they wanted to say or where they were going or what to do with certain plot threads. Now, there are certainly aspects of Problem Child you can take shots at, but this is not one of them. It's a really solid setup. The middle section is slightly less entertaining, and the last 20 minutes or so are fascinatingly misguided. But this first half hour, I think, is really well done. It's not a masterpiece, but you know, you got to evaluate these things on a sliding scale. And I think if you take into consideration what their aim was here, this is a really strong start.
I think that I kind of miss these kind of dark comedies from the late 80s into like the early 90s. Kind of the, you know, the like maybe the Throw Mama from the Train type, yeah, you know, dark comedies that were just, you know, unafraid to just make people really terrible.
Yeah.
And this movie, I mean, everyone other than John Ritter and the kid are so terrible to each other and just in generally, that's just their kind of motivation. I definitely miss like the clear, like you said, the clear motivations for characters and the clear point of view. And I think that, the grandfather, Jack Warden's character and Amy Asbeck are both really good, like satirical characters. They're making a point about politics and consumerism and, you know, status.
Right.
And let me tell you guys, I am a parent. I am really powerful. She's not wrong about that. I have all sorts of power. I also had to clean poop off my hand right before we recorded this, so power coming out of my ears.
Well, but I mean, so before we move on, is there anything anyone wants to say about this first part of the movie?
I like that some of the kids in the opening montage are blonde.
Yes.
Oh, he's a redhead, yeah, yeah.
But sometimes he's played by a blonde kid.
Oh my gosh, yeah, yeah.
I thought that was good. I like the boy's narration.
Right away, good, I loved it. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a good narrator. And yeah, the opening really gets you. Is like, what a lousy day to be born or something like that.
A great
like,
day to be born, isn't it? Like, it's,
there you go.
It's
that's
his
what it
delivery,
is
too, because it's not like he's... I mean, he didn't go on to do a whole lot, and it's not like he's an amazing actor, but for this role, he's perfect. Perfect. He's got that slight southern drawl.
Yes, he does.
And his delivery is like, it's often surprising. It's not how you would expect a line to be said, and I think he's charismatic as hell. I think he's really, really watchable.
I do think as an actor, he probably struggled because, you know, just from watching the editing of it, like,
yes,
a lot of his lines are cutaway close-ups.
Like, oh, totally.
They must have had to do this like 20 times.
Well, this is the other thing, too, is when you watch the second one, clearly he's working with a director that isn't quite as good as working with him as this director was, and the editing's also a bit looser. And for me, the second one really shows his, you know, his shortcomings as an actor, but it also feels shitty to pick on a little kid. I mean, he's 7 years old and he made this. I think he's really good. I thought he was perfect for this part. But like I said, the middle chunk of the movie is more of a mixed bag for me. I like a lot of the scenes when you look at them individually, but overall it's pretty repetitive. And again, the running time is so short that it's not a huge problem, but but it basically comes down to this. Someone says or does something shitty to Junior. He gets revenge. John Ritter is horrified. Everyone else calls Junior a monster, but he's not ready to give up on him. Over and over and over.
I would say to escalating returns, though. I mean, it goes from like terrorizing the cat to like sicking a bear on a group.
But that's
camp.
One of the first thing that right? happens, though. I mean, that's one of the first major. I'm going to get more into that later after we've said our piece about this second part of the movie. But that bear scene is fucking stupid. It just makes Ben's character look like a doofus, which is too bad because until the bear shows up, the rest of that's pretty good. I mean, the rest of that seems pretty good.
You know what's in my notes say, the bear, let me find the exact line. Bear scene is timeless. I love that bear
oh
scene.
Oh my gosh.
It's so stupid, but it's so good.
But that's why it bothers me, not because of what's happening. It's because it's so blatantly a real bear and so obviously a costume. That's what I mean about him looking
like. Yeah, but they were traumatized by the bear the first time. They didn't know what they were looking at, man.
No, no, no. John Ritter. When a real bear comes walking towards him and he's like, oh, yo, kids, what's the matter? You scared of the bear? I mean,
hey, oh, real quick. John Ritter, Ben.
Yeah.
Coaches Little League.
With no kid. Well, this is the thing.
I wrote down, if you coach Little League and you are not a father, you are a pedophile.
Right. And this is something I was thinking, too, was that if this were not John Ritter, I'd be calling bullshit or I'd be very concerned. Because it's John Ritter,
Robin
I'm just
Williams
sort of
or
like,
something?
Oh, yeah, he's told, yes, yes.
Yeah.
There are fingers and orifices and parents, you have no idea.
Oh, no.
But that's... That's not how John Ritter rolls. So it, to no, me, it's just not. More of like, oh, he really wants to be a dad. He really wants. Yeah. But, well, okay. So the camping thing, though, it sets up something that I think is sort of a missed opportunity. It's we see how Ben changes Junior, but it would have been nice if Junior changed Ben too. Like if gradually Junior had become a more trusting and less angry person, while at the same time, Ben was developing more of a backbone and learning to stand up for himself. Because the way it's set up, we touched on this earlier, you kind of think, oh, these two are perfect for each other. They're exactly what the other one needs. But it's really just in the next to last scene that they both just all of a sudden have a real turnaround. Yeah. I mean, they both still change. And for the purposes of the movie, I think it's fine. But just for me personally, I would have liked more of a progression with all of it and more of a complementary relationship where they're both learning from one another. And a few simple tweaks would have really helped the structure of the second act and definitely would have helped some grotesquely out of place scenes towards the end. But before I get into all of that, I want to highlight a few other moments from this section of the movie. The first is Michael Richards' escape from prison.
Oh my gosh.
Look, I get...
I see blood.
I get that this is sort of a heightened reality, but you have to retain just a small degree of plausibility. You just can't color this far outside the lines. I can't even one or two things that are wrong with this. It's the whole enchilada. Like, I mean, it's just like the... Yeah, he does. He's like, I see blood, and it cuts, and I'm like, what the fuck just happened? And then there's a car leaving the prison. And I'm like, no, he's not. They're not gonna. And then, oh, it's him in the car in a disguise, pretending to be the doctor.
I had to rewatch it.
Even like a disguise, he's wearing a hat and smoking a pipe.
It's a hat. Yeah,
yeah. Well, that's what doctors do.
Yeah, clearly.
There are certain things that that happen very quickly, but that as ridiculous and unrealistic as they are, within this movie, they kind of make sense. Like how quickly Junior gets out of the orphanage. Like, I mean, it's been set up. They really want this kid gone. He's got to go. So the fact that they're meeting him for the first time the day they're being sent home with him is kind of like, you sure we're not going to? But it's Junior. So obviously, I'm just going to go with it because I understand that in this movie, that's how it happens. They want him gone, he's gone. But this, the escape, just felt like, you know what? I really don't want to waste a couple of minutes explaining this. And to be honest, I don't really have a good answer. So he's out, okay? He's out.
They could have easily had Junior send him something that helps him break out.
Sure, yeah.
That's it. Like, something like that.
Like the disguise. Like a pipe and a hat.
Exactly.
Oh my God.
I guess I'm a fool. Where did he get the pipe and hat from, Carlos? Stupid Carlos.
I probably laughed harder than I should have at the implication that mom's been diddling herself to bodybuilding magazines.
Oh my God. She keeps her needlepoint in her crochet.
So
and it just keeps going. Every drawer he shuts.
And they're such like 90s, like, men.
The Fabio
so
hair.
Bad.
Oh,
it's
fantastic.
So bad.
Oh, oh my God.
And the boy is just like,
And what an inconspicuous place to leave them in the fucking living room.
I thought of that. Oh, I was like, gosh. Why are those in there of all places? But hey,
she's clearly new at this.
Can we talk about how no parents on earth would make that bedroom for any child?
Oh my God.
Not unless you hate children.
If you hate your child, maybe if you have like a child kidnapped in your home, maybe you keep him in that room. That's horrible.
Grotesque.
Like, what if he was scared of clowns?
Well, he is now.
Yeah.
Yeah, and as far as I'm concerned, everything he does from this point in the movie on, totally justified.
His reaction, like, as a narrator, is like, what are they, retarded? Because it was okay to say that in 1990.
Yeah. Well, also in this instance, we should probably...
I'm just gonna leave that out there.
I mean, just chew on it for a while, guys. I'm just saying. Rewatch.
I want
the
you to
movie.
Leave those 2 minutes of beats there in between. Maybe silence.
Rewatch the movie in that context. See what grows.
Different movie. Different movie.
Well, we probably should talk about the girl's birthday party really quick. That little girl is so awful, which is so great.
First tidbit of trivia, that little girl is the daughter of Larry, the next door neighbor from Three's Company.
Oh, weird.
Yeah. Drop some knowledge on you. You see that shooting star? It's followed by the words, the more you know.
The funny thing about that sequence is... You know, she has she tells him that, you know, she doesn't like him and he can't come to her magic show because it's her party. She makes the rules. And then right before the montage starts of him doing all these terrible things to her and the guests, we hear her voice in his head say it again. But it's like, that was 2 minutes ago. I fucking remember. You don't need to remind me she said that. That just happened.
In case you forgot, in this 70-minute movie.
Yeah. Why is he doing this? Oh, right.
Oh, she's totally mean to
him. And then there's the baseball game, and this is another scene that makes me angry because this is another instance where clearly everyone else is being a prick. They're chanting "son of dork" at this poor kid. Donna's right there with him, apparently. None of the adults are doing anything. Some of them are laughing.
Yeah.
Like Donna.
What an asshole, am I right? Son of dork.
Look, quite frankly, I think they all get off lightly, but like as he runs around the field hitting them with his bat. So this is the moment where Ben's had enough. Clearly something's wrong with this kid. So they try to get him to see a priest, which seems ludicrous. At this point, Ben hasn't really given up on him. He blames himself because he thinks he's failed and that Junior hates him. And so he decides that all he can do, all that's left to do, is take him back to the orphanage. And so they go to Gilbert Gottfried, who doesn't want to take Junior back, and they get into a fight. And Flo says one of my favorite lines in the movie, "Oh, so now I'm a bad parent because I hate my kid?" Amazing. But here's the thing. This is a good scene that comes way too late, and it creates a really big problem for the next few scenes. And if it's okay with you guys, and if no one else has anything else to say, I want to talk about how I think they could have fixed this by shuffling some stuff around. But if there's anything else about this middle chunk, I go ahead and say it.
I was shocked that they like turn the camera away when he's like killing the kids. I don't remember seeing.
Well,
that.
I don't think he's killing them.
And he's hurting them pretty bad with that bat. He's getting pretty violent. Violence is implied, I would say.
Yeah.
But I wasn't. I can't remember a movie that I've watched like that where they're like, this is what's gonna happen. He's actually gonna like really injure at least 5 people, and you're not gonna see any of it. I was surprised. And, you know, I was okay with it. I just kept chanting "son of dork" and it worked out
all
right.
Mm-hmm. After all that, I wanted to see some bat to face.
Yeah, I wanted to see it.
I wanted to feel it.
Yeah.
Every time it cut away, I was like, no.
it was a little weird. I was expecting to see something, but... Yeah, back to my muscle magazines, I guess.
I like in that baseball scene. I think the baseball sequence, like, although it doesn't really connect with the rest of the like the movie that well, he's defending his father, so that's kind of sweet.
Right.
And I think it's also like the tightest sequence in the movie. Like it's cut well. There's a cutaway to John Ritter, like, "Drop the bat, Junior," and then he like to himself, like, "Are you nuts?" and then the moment where he's like, touchdown at the end, and like everyone is horrified. It's like, if this wasn't a comedy, that would actually be a really haunting moment, like in that movie. Like,
oh,
it would be super creepy. Seriously. If this kid maimed 6 other kids and then like yelled touchdown at a baseball game. And the look on John Ritter when he's just like, this kid is a sociopath. Like, this kid's going to kill me in my sleep.
All right, so I want to talk about the structure of this, because I don't mind the sequence either. I really like it. I just think that it's more what happens right after this I have a problem with. And I think all of these things could have stayed in the movie. It's just a matter of reorganizing some stuff and changing what the characters are doing in each scene throughout the second act. Because, all right, so here, the problem is that this scene ends with John Ritter learning, you know, Junior's been brought back 30 other times. Not this scene, but this part of this section of the film, because then he goes, this is the moment where he's like, I've had enough, we're taking him back to the orphanage. All right, so Junior's been brought back 30 times before. He realizes this is the actual problem, that everybody's given up on this kid. He has no reason to trust adults. He wants to be the one to change that. John Ritter's going to love the ever-living shit out of Junior until he learns that, you know, that he is on his side. But then the very next thing that happens is that Junior locks himself in the car because he thinks he's going back to the orphanage. And then he takes off driving with Ben on the hood and crashes through the front of Grandpa's sporting goods store. Then the scene after that is a traumatized and borderline catatonic Ben reading The Exorcist, who then goes upstairs and is about to suffocate Junior with a pillow. He is straight up going to murder his son. A doorbell saves the kid's life.
Yep.
So it's like, what the fuck? This is a pretty substantial turnaround we've had here in just one scene. And there are these two moments that feel the most misguided to me. Ben making his declaration that he's going to stand by this kid no matter what, immediately changing his mind, even though it's not that big of an escalation of the other shit he's been through with Junior up to this point. He was almost eaten by a bear, for God's sake. And then the suffocation joke. It all feels so horribly out of character for him. So here's what I propose. Instead of waiting until the end of the movie, they should have taken Junior back to the orphanage after the incident with the bear. That's when they feel like they've been duped by Gilbert Gottfried. It's the first severe thing that the kid does. Ben doesn't have as strong a bond with Junior yet. And that's when there's the revelation that he's been returned 30 other times. So Ben decides, no, I'm not doing that. I can change this kid. And then so the second act is all about this commitment he's made to work with Junior. And like I said before, there's, you know, there should be more give and take on both sides. Junior's gradually becoming more trusting of this guy, and Ben's learning to stand up for himself. The problem is Junior is still misunderstood by everyone else. Only Ben sees what a great kid he could be and sort of already is. And this destroys his relationship with his wife because she wanted a kid she could show off and not one she actually had to put work into. It amplifies the tension between him and his father, and it also wrecks his pseudo friendship, you know, with these other shitty families in the neighborhood. And then worst of all, Ben starts to doubt that he's reaching this kid. You know, you take this, the scene of the baseball game, maybe Junior's provoked, but Ben doesn't see that part of it. He doesn't realize that what Junior's doing is defending him. To him, it just looks like he's lashed out again, and this time people are seriously getting hurt. And it looks like for all his effort, he still failed this kid. So now Ben's feeling pretty low too. His marriage is ruined, his career is ruined, his reputation is ruined, and he did it all for this boy that he ultimately couldn't break through to. And Junior, meanwhile, sees the same old pattern repeating itself and is especially hurt because he actually really liked Ben. He thought this guy was his friend, but it turns out he's just like all the rest. So now the wall goes up again, and this time, you know, stronger than ever. Then the bow tie killer shows up, and Junior's thinking, well, screw it. Clearly, this is the type of person I should be hanging out with. This guy will understand me because he's misunderstood, too. And leave out the suffocation scene entirely. And then the climax can basically play out the same way. Ben finds the picture Junior drew and realizes he did get through to him. Junior sees Ben risking his life to save him after the bow tie killer turns out, you know, not to be what he expected. And Flo still has a pig fart in her face because she's the worst. But I think that would have given the second act some direction, and we'd see Ben's frustration mounting rather than all of a sudden doing a total 180 on this kid between scenes.
Yeah, I think that sounds way better. We should probably start casting for...
Well, I think we may have missed the boat on this one, but... Well, it's just so frustrating because it's not... It's just a simple math... Oh, it seems so simple. It's such a... I don't know.
Yeah, there's definitely a moment at the end of the camping scene where he's looking at Junior in a tree and he's looking with this look in his eyes. It's like, oh no, like this boy is as bad as advertised. And that would, it would very easily, you could just as easily made, okay, so the whole reason he ends up going to the priest, like the only reason they ever go to this priest is just so you get that moment when, Junior hears, Ben say that he's going to take him back to the orphanage.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's the only reason that's, you know, the whole reason you take him to a church is just so you can have the confessional.
Right.
So he could very easily just as like overheard Ben and Flo talking about it in the bedroom.
Or in the kitchen, because in the very next scene, they're in the kitchen talking about, oh, Flo, you should have seen the way he was laughing at what he did.
Yeah, and at that point, you know, you take out the church scene, which is kind of the weirdest scene in the whole thing. It's like, why did you
super
go to,
weird.
Like, your first, like, I would take the kid to a cop before I took him to a church.
Well, do we want to talk about this climax, though? Because there's two things about it that stand out to me. The first is that when the bow tie killer shows up, Mom gives it up immediately.
Oh,
she can't
God.
Get her panties off fast enough. He's not even a bodybuilder.
That's ridiculous.
Well, it's a quote unquote real man for the first time.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, it's oh my gosh. This stranger has just walked into our house, and oh my gosh, that even as a child, that really bothered me. Infidelity in movies in general really bothered me. As a kid.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know. I had very traditional values as a child.
Good for you. You know, absolutely.
And then the second is where they're chasing the bow tie killer. They're having a car chase, and Junior's driving. And Ben is shooting at the killer.
Yes.
What kind of lesson is this? Like, here, son, let me show you how to execute someone.
Well, he was, you know what? He did lay down some guidelines. Okay, first of all, no, because he's a serial killer. He's going to kill a serial killer. So it's like a Dexter type vigilante. He's doing the world a favor, first of all, by killing the bow-tie killer. And secondly, he does teach him a lesson. He's like, Junior, you cannot shoot a car and drive a You cannot shoot a gun and drive a car at the same time, which is a very good lesson. You need a driver. You need
goodness.
A driver. I thought that was a fair lesson. If you're going to start teaching lessons about guns, yeah, gun safety. And yeah, it would have been ideal if they had had an adult driver so he didn't have to be like, to the left, to the right, faster. But they made it work. It was teamwork and it was...
It's just funny how it's... Good encouraging two terrible, like, horribly bad behavior. First, you driving, so bad, but except now. Go ahead, roll with it. And also, here's how you use a gun, and you can kill people, but only if they're bad.
Well, yeah, I mean,
that's
lesson. Yeah, I think that's fine.
Yeah.
What the fuck, that's
in the Constitution, Chris.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
Have you learned nothing from Batman, Chris?
Okay,
you
Batman
can kill
doesn't
people
kill.
If they're
bad. Oh God,
I'm not
Carlos.
Even smiling right now. I'm so mad.
Oh shit!
I'm just kidding, but I did get really serious there for a second. Whoa, whoa, whoa!
Son of dork.
I
Son
believe
of
Batman
dork.
Has one rule. All right, well, hold on. There's also...
Rachel, you drive the Batmobile. I'm going to shoot.
I saw this in a movie once.
Well, I see you're using proper gun safety.
Is that your Bane voice?
That's my Bane.
Oh my gosh, do more.
God, I hope it's not your Alfred voice.
That's what I thought at first. Wait, Donna, try doing an Alfred.
Okay. I've always looked after you, Mr. Wayne. Yep.
Oh, man.
Oh, you're welcome.
I'm not sure where to go from that, but... The other thing I want to mention is the shot in the prune gag.
Oh, shot in the prune.
The old shot
I got
in the
shot
prune
in the
gag.
Prune.
No, no, but you know what I mean? Where the object that saves you from the bullet. Okay, this is probably the first time I think I saw this trope in a movie. But the part that I love is when the cop is like, oh, we're going to get an ambulance over here. And he's like, oh, it's okay, officer. He got me in the prune. The cop is just like, all right. And then he just fucking gets right out of there.
Oh, happens every day.
Yeah. Oh, phew. I've just
got this test. How I would be as a cop. Oh, I'd be that way if I was a cop.
You all right? Okay. I mean, if you say you're all right, I'm just going to go. That's fine by me. I got other things to do.
You good? You good, Jack Tripper? You good? All right, I'm out.
Cancel the ambulance. He got shot in the prune. Oh, the prune. Okay. All right, wrap it up, guys. Well, I mean, so unless anyone has anything to say, I guess we can move on to, you know, final thoughts and all that business.
I want to say that I love the choice of putting Flo not just in the trunk, but in a suitcase.
Yeah. I seriously think the whole movie was a 70-minute build-up to a farting pig punchline. We've really got to get all those pieces in place. Amazing. And it wouldn't have worked if she were just in the trunk.
I was like, what happened in this movie? Like, did they... You know, was she like, my scheduling commitments are just over with and you just use a suitcase for the rest of life? Because she could have easily just like been a person in the trunk, and she could have easily been a person just like flying out of the trunk. But everything, you don't see her anymore because she's inside
just a voice,
of a not that big suitcase.
Okay, well, my final thoughts... I think the critics were a little hard on this one. It's not a great film, but it's not a total wash either. I like what it's trying to say, and I like the message, even if it's a bit heavy-handed or muddled by some of the toilet humor. Actual, literal toilet humor in one instance. But yeah, it made me laugh a lot more than I expected it to, and performance-wise, there's a lot to latch on to. It's a great cast with great comedic timing. It's not a perfect movie, but I thought it was surprisingly charming and fun. It seems like most people would disagree with me, but that's okay. I'll concede that it has its share of shortcomings, but it's also still got... I mean, I'll still go to bat for other aspects of it. Does Bane agree with me? I can hear the build-up. The breath. Let me get ready. Hold on.
My friend draws all ghoul and I lost it.
You nailed the ghoul part. Ghoul. That is oh my god. Oh my god. To make it really authentic, I'm gonna make your dialogue 100 times louder than ours.
Okay, please do.
Oh my god. Anyway, I believe we need your final thoughts.
I thought it held up surprisingly well. I was a little bit worried when we started watching it and all the nutty kids and Flo is awful. But I think once I kind of sunk into the world of the movie, like you said, that there are flaws, but it is surprisingly more watchable than I expected it to be. And don't worry if you're thinking about, if you have like memories of the childhood, all the puking, just watch number one, skip two, don't worry about it. So I had some anxiety about watching that. I don't know why, but I just did not want to see it. And then of course I did watch it again. But, yeah, Problem Child 1, not a bad film. Pretty decent. Like you said, great performances and, yeah.
Carlos?
I think that this might be the first one that I've watched that I didn't like that much as a kid that I'd like as an adult. It made some good satiric points. It had a strong point of view. I thought the characters were strong. I thought that maybe, like, this movie in context comes out about 6 months before Home Alone.
Ooh.
So like, you know, we were about to hit, you know, like, this would have been like a cheap knockoff the next year. But, you know, it's kind of gets in right under the gun. It kind of Indiana Joneses its way in, you know, and grabs its hat. And I think that it's, and I was surprised with how much I enjoy this. And I can't for the life of me understand why John Ritter didn't have more movies.
Oh, yeah.
He was so good in this. Yeah. Like, he was fantastic in this.
Well, and you know what? I have to say, yes, John Ritter, great. I also want to give some credit to the writers because, or and discredit at the same time, because when I watched the second one, I definitely watched the second one more as a kid. That's the one I kept going back to. It's a little more over the top. It looks more polished, but it is, I don't think it's a very good movie at all. And what I was most shocked by was John Ritter feels like a totally different character in the second one.
He does.
It's not the same dad. And so I was shocked to see that it was the same writers. So props for how he was written in this movie. What the fuck happened in the second one?
Well, it took, I mean, they made the movie a year later. They didn't even have time to probably even like settle down.
I'm sure that's part of it. It's a really, I was really disappointed in the second one, to the point where like at one point I know I said like we were going to maybe talk about both of them, and then no, we should definitely give the second one its own episode. And now I'm not even sure I want to watch that one again.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it, so suckers.
But yeah, overall theme, I think we were all pretty surprised by how much we enjoyed it. I really, really thought this was not going to be a great movie. It's still pretty juvenile in certain spots, but had a lot more going for it than I remembered or even could possibly have picked up on as a child.
Totally agree.
Donna, it's time for the game.
Who would you be and who would you F?
The hell was that?
That was
the theme music, goddammit. Please. It's Marlon Brando humming a tune to himself.
I was listening to this song on the radio, and it goes...
That, I'm using it, you're kidding, but that's going to be the theme next week.
Fantastic, I fucking love it. I love it.
Have you guys seen this new show, Who Would You Be, Who Would You F? It goes... Ba, 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 ba.
Guys, it's been a long week. I am real tired. That joke is going to make me laugh for 3 days straight.
Awesome.
Just the idea of, like, James Caan going, oh no, Marlon Brando is nuts.
I'm sweating.
Francis, you know the show.
Oh, boy.
The audience is going to love this. Just 5 minutes of laughing.
You feel free to laugh right along, you know.
Oh my god.
That's so good.
Marlon, right. what did you do last night? Anything, you see anything good on TV?
Well, I watch this new show. It's called Who Would You Be, Who Would You F? It goes, you know it. Ba-da-ba-da. It's hosted by Bane. He hosts it.
I think we've been laughing longer than the actual podcast.
We have. Oh my god.
I'm crying. I'm literally crying over here.
Who would you be and who would you are?
You're fucking murdering me. You gotta stop. This is the best / worst thing that's ever happened on the show.
Oh man.
Oh fuck. Okay, take it away, Bane.
All right. Yes.
There are only like three adults in this movie.
Yeah, this is a tough one.
Yeah, I had some trouble, but I'm going to guess. I think we should guess for Chris first.
Okay.
So I'm going to guess that, I mean, everybody loves John Ritter. You want to, like, probably meet John Ritter. But what if you wanted to be the bow tie killer? I think that would be kind of a fun thing.
Oh my god. Batman. This might be a wash. This might be done. I don't know if we're gonna get
who would you be and who would you off?
Oh my god.
So I think that you want to be the bow tie killer, and I think that you want to F that awful lady Flo.
I think you want to be John Ritter. I'm going with the easy one. I think you want to F that really terrible little girl's mom. Guys, I didn't put a lot of thought into that. I just kind of guessed.
I forgot she was in the movie. This is hard because there's not actually a single person in this movie I'd ever trade places with. So, I don't know. I'd be Flo's vibrator. That's the second vibrator joke in as many episodes. I promise, I swear, I'm going to try really hard not to mention that word once in the next episode.
I mean, maybe we can get some sponsorship. Do you have a favorite brand? We should look into this shit. Mm-hmm.
Do I have a favorite brand of vibrator?
Sure, if you get one, you know. We'll figure something out.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, and then I get, who would I F? Yeah, Flo, there just really aren't any other
There's
options.
No other women. It's the nun with the giant wart on her head.
I mean, yes. Right. If you, yeah, there's...
She's wild.
She could probably... Yeah.
She's wild.
Okay.
So, who's next?
Let's do Carlos. I think that Carlos would be... oh, do you want to go first, Chris? Because I went first last time. You want to guess
first? I don't care.
Yeah, you guess first.
All right, so I guessed that Carlos would be the bow tie killer and would F Flo. This is going to be so repetitive because there are, like, four characters in the movie.
I can't wait till we do 12 Angry Men. It's going to be great.
He would be Marlon Brando and he would F Bane. Let's hear what that sounds like.
It kind of sounds like...
I thought he would take me to dinner first.
Oh my god. I mean, I asked for it. I don't know.
You did. You really did.
Specifically,
you
yes.
really did.
I'm going to guess Carlos would be Big Ben. Because he's fun and...
What? No, he's the worst. Carlos, Donna hates you. What the fuck?
Oh, my
he's
God.
He's the mayor.
It's true. He
business.
Is running for office.
Yeah. Mm. Uh-huh. And the only female of effable age, Amy Yazbeck.
Of an effable age. And I hope that your first son is an effable son. Okay, so yeah, I would be John Ritter.
Everybody's John Ritter.
Happening.
Mm-hmm. Nobody wants a good
all,
meaty
keeping,
character part.
Keeping score, yeah. I would be Ben.
Okay. All right.
I think Ritter is the meatiest character part.
Yeah, he's meaty.
All right, here's my trick answer for who would I F.
Ooh. Oh,
you ready for this?
Oh, yeah.
You ready for this? All right. Now, when this movie came out, I was 7.
Uh-oh.
Oh, God. It's a kid. Oh, my God, it's a kid.
Hold on. That's just wrong.
This episode is real trouble.
Problem episode.
No. I don't think we're coming back from this one.
Don't worry. There's 25 minutes of laughing before this. No one's gonna hear.
Yeah, you're right. This is just for us at this point.
This is a secret track on the end. No, I remember as a little kid thinking that the terrible little girl was very cute.
Okay.
So then I Googled her to see what she looks like today.
Oh, hey.
Totally effable.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, there you go. I would F no one from this movie. But I would look up that one and say,
look
hey,
her up. Mm-hmm.
Let's F.
Hey, I guess we're
I'm just going to call her and be like,
She'll know. There you go.
She'll know.
All right. So Carlos is going to Google children on the internet. Donna. Okay.
Well, that just makes it sound wrong.
We got to. Donna, I'm going to guess that. Would you be. I thought maybe Junior because he's. I thought, you know, that's a fun character. And then maybe you'd F. Gilbert Gottfried. I'm just kidding. Gilbert Gottfried definitely. Got really excited for a second.
Uh-huh.
In the fictional universe where he listens to this show.
Somebody would ask me.
He felt it just now. There was a second of perking up and then, oh.
If you guys have not Googled Gilbert Gottfried, Gilbert...
No, we don't, if you guys
Carlos. If you guys have not Googled Gilbert Gottfried reading 50 Shades of Grey,
oh my God.
You need to do
that.
Okay. It's hilarious.
Okay.
It's amazing.
I could do that.
Okay, I want to... All right, so who would you F? I want to believe it would be John Ritter, but my gut's telling me maybe the Bowtie Killer.
I
He's such a man.
I do have amazing taste in men.
I'm thinking you would be Gilbert Gottfried.
Okay. Okay.
And I'm thinking you would F the fireman photo from the drawer.
I thought of those. I didn't know if they counted as actual characters in the movie.
They were in the movie, Chris.
I like
they
that
affected
it was specifically
the way I felt
the
about the movie.
You're right. In the universe of the film, they exist. So I love that it's specifically the fireman.
That's amazing.
Well, yeah, the other ones are lame. Yeah. The fireman, he's got it going
on.
Surprised.
He had that hose and everything. Yeah, I remember him.
He had that hose.
He had them hoes.
So, you're both sort of right. I actually did choose to be Gilbert Gottfried.
Yes!
Shyamalan twist!
I don't know, something about his body behavior and, he's always scheming. I don't know, I chose him. I probably should have chosen John Ritter, but I, in fact, chose Michael Richards, the racist bow tie killer, to be my one and only F.
I was like, was he racist in the movie, but in real life?
If he got through the 25 minutes of laughing, I'm sure he's right there with us. And he's thrilled that
absolutely.
I would F him as Gilbert Gottfried. It would be a magical night indeed.
Oh, as Gilbert Gottfried.
That is effed up.
No, I mean, you know.
No, you guys, you gotta do it slower.
Marlon Brando in the corner eating, commenting.
He's got pasta.
No. Do it slower. Do it sexy.
I think that is it for us, guys. Please let us know if you have any other suggestions for other movies we should revisit. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.